We'll get started. We took a little diversion from sort of the analysis and queuing side of things, probabilistic side of things, to look at simulation models and sort of the analysis of simulation models, how we can interpret simulation models. That's sort of a self-contained topic. We're now going to return to analysis and particularly examining queuing models and properties of queues. Okay, now, 4 weeks ago, I guess now, we started this. We started looking at Markov processes, birth-death processes, and deriving transient solutions for birth-death processes. We also have examined in some level of detail the concept of a Poisson process, so in terms of a pure birth model, and then the memoryless aspects and the randomness of these solution or this sort of a distribution. And we noted that in terms of arrival, it was sort of the maximally random process that you could come up with. So what we're going to do this lecture and continuing forward is to look not at the transients, but at the steady-state solutions. So we gave conditions under which the initial conditions of the system ceased to matter, and you could assume that the system was in steady state, so the distributions were fixed as time progressed. Okay, so what we'd like to do is look at what those distributions are. So what is your probability of being in any given state? And again, when you're in the steady state, the stationary portion, when your system is stationary, then that's fixed. It's not dependent on time. Okay. And so we noted that the stationary distribution of a Markov chain is given by the solution to 0 equals pi times q, where q was your state transition rates. Okay, and again, if you think back, there was a equivalent transient where you had pi of t equals pi of, or d pi of t equals pi of t times q of t. But again, as in, if you're stationary, that derivative goes to zero. Okay. So in order to find a unique solution, you need to couple this with a normalizing condition, and that just says that the sum of the pi's is equal to 1. Okay, so this is giving you a distribution on being in the various states, so obviously you want them all to sum to 1. You have to be in some state. Okay, and so we had a general transition rate matrix Q, which again, this is for birth-death processes, so you either arrive or depart. You arrive with some rate lambda from your arrive into You transition out of state I via an arrival at a rate of lambda I, and you transition out of state I via a departure at a rate of mu I. Okay. And we observed that we had to balance departures with staying in the given state. So whatever you have in terms of departing from the state, you have the negative rate of remaining in that state. Okay. And so what we're going to do today is going to be to look at a lot of different flavors of what those lambdas and mus might look at and what sort of interpretation we can put on those different flavors. But generically, that's your equation. So this gives us a set of linear equations, and so again, those flows have to balance, so you can depart a state, in terms of arriving into a state k, you can arrive from the previous state with a rate of lambda k minus 1, or arrive from the next state with a rate of mu k, and again balancing that off against staying in state k. Okay. Now, states start at zero, so zero is sort of a special case. Well, so the only way to get to zero is you. So if you balance out, let's just see, is that right? Sorry, I'm getting confused here. Okay, yes, because you can depart from pi 0 with a rate of lambda 0, so you have to balance that out. You can't depart from pi 1. I mean, you can't depart from pi 0 by a death because you don't have it. So, again, the balance is to not have that arrival occur. Okay. So, again, you can write that down in terms of the matrix, or frequently it's easier to look at state transition diagrams and just attach the possible flows to that diagram. I wouldn't have gotten confused with the last one if I'd actually done that. And then you're going to balance in coming into the state and exiting from the state. Okay. So, if we look, for instance, at state 1, then how can you get into state 1? You have pi 0 times lambda 0, so you can come, you can have an arrival from state 0, or you can have a departure from state 2. So that gives you the flow into the state. The flow out of the state is, well, you can either have an arrival with rate of lambda 1 or a departure with rate of mu 1. Okay, and so again, in steady state, those have to balance. Okay, if not, if the rate in is not equal to the rate out, then you're either increasing or decreasing your likelihood of being in that state. So these are usually easier to work with, again, considering the state and balancing rates in and rates out for the state. Okay. So, again, that's here we had two equations because zero was sort of a special case. You can roll 3 into 2, equation 3 into equation 2, by sort of extending the states backwards, but then noting that you can't actually move to those states. Okay, so you can define lambda minus 1, minus 2, minus 3, and mu 0, mu minus 1, mu minus 2, mu minus 3, but they have to be 0. But if you did that, you'd have a chain going back and forth. Okay. Okay, and we note that, well, we also can't get into those states. But it does allow us to write a single equation for the entire, a single unified equation. So now we ask, well, how do we solve for pi? And we can do that recursively, starting with pi 1. We can do it recursively in terms of pi 0. Okay. So either set k equal to 0 for this equation, or again, just go back to looking at your balance equations and note that again, in either case, you have lambda 0, pi 0 equals mu 1, pi 1. Okay. Or pi 1 is lambda 0, mu 1 over lambda 0 over mu 1 times pi 0. Okay. Now we can insert that. Value of pi 1 into the equation for pi 2. So again, the balance equation from 4 gives us this. And if we go ahead and solve that, we get that pi 2 is lambda 1 over mu 2, pi 1 is the product of the lambdas divided by the product of the mu's times pi 0. Okay. And again, for each k, you're going to get this product. Okay, so pi k is lambda 0 times lambda 1 up to times lambda k minus 1 over mu 1, mu 2 up to mu k times pi 0. So what do we have there? We've got all of our probabilities in terms of pi zero, so in terms of the probability of being in state zero. So if we can figure out what the probability of being in that state zero is, we've solved what the probability of being in any further state is. Okay, just sort of tidying up our notation, we can express pi k as pi zero times the product of lambda I over mu I plus 1. Excuse me. And again, for k equals 0, we're going from I equals 0 to minus 1. And so we just define that as being 1. Okay. So in other words, pi 0 equals pi 0. Okay. So, again, we now use our normalization equation, or the fact that some of these probabilities had better be 1. So we get some pi k equals 1, but all the pi k's are a function of pi 0 now. So you get pi 0, the sum of the product of lambda I over mu I plus 1. Tidy up that empty product, or the case where k equals 0, we just pull it out, you have 1, and then you have the sum from k equals 1 to infinity of the product, and that should work. Okay, so we now have a general equilibrium or stationary solution for the birth-death process. And as I said, what we're going to do now is look at specific cases with different arrival rates and departure rates and give some interpretation to why they might be of interest, and then derive results. The easiest by far to work with is our MM1Q. And so here we assume that we have sort of a Q of infinite length, Poisson arrival process, Poisson departure process, and so again, not probably the most realistic entity in the world, but again, the one that's by far the most mathematically tractable. So we'll have a look at what sort of results we can get for it, and then start looking at things that might be a little more realistic. Okay, so the arrivals have exponentially distributed inter-arrival times. The service times are also exponentially distributed. We have a single server and unlimited queue length. And again, if we draw the state transition diagram, we get a diagram where all of the arrival rates are the same. They're always lambda. All of the departure rates are the same. They're always mu. Okay. So again, that makes writing down our distributions in terms of the probability of being in a state as being quite simple. Okay, one thing to note is that we slid from using pi to denote our distribution to using p. And the excuse is that p is sort of more common in the literature. Okay, so pi 0 and p 0, pi k and pk are, you know, the same. Okay, so we have our normalization equation, and we can use that to solve for p0. So p0 is 1 plus the sum of p0 times 1 plus the sum of lambda over mu to the k is 1, so p0 is 1 over 1 plus the sum of lambda over mu to the k. And so, again, this is one of our sort of well-known sums. And so we, it's the sum of exponentials. And if we start from k to 0, so pull out the lambda mu, pull out a single lambda mu, then you get that it's 1. You get 1 over 1 minus u, and then the one we pulled out, the lambda mu. Okay. So tidying that up, you get the p0 is 1 minus lambda mu. Okay. Returning, plugging that back in to find out what pk is, we get pk is 1 minus 1 minus lambda mu, so p0 times lambda mu to lambda over mu to the k. Okay. So again, frequently we will measure. We will express lambda over mu using rho, and again we think of rho as a measure of system busyness. So it's the ratio of arrivals to service, and we would require that rho be less than 1. Okay, so if rho is greater than 1, so your things are arriving at a rate greater than they're departing, then what's going to happen? Well, the system is going to grow indefinitely. So you will not have the requirements for our Markov condition. We won't have stability. We won't have ergodicity. Okay. Yes.
Would you say rho is the load in the system then? So other than positive 1, it's exponentially growing. Is that the way you think of it?
Yes. Yeah, one interpretation is that rho is the load, the offered load to the system. And for this particular case, I'm just going to add that caveat. For this particular case, if rho approaches 1, then, again, you're approaching maximal load, and we saw before what that did to the average number of customers in the system. That started growing. Okay, as a matter of fact, that's the next thing we're going to look at. Okay. So, yeah, we've already used Little's law to calculate the average number of customers in the system. Now we'll do it directly. We have a distribution on the probability of being in any state, so the probability that there's a certain number of customers in the system, so we just directly calculate the expectation. So you get the sum of K, PK. Okay. And so PK is 1 minus rho, rho to the K. Pull out the 1 minus rho, you've got a sum K, rho to the K. And we can use our trick of taking the differential to solve that. So we get rid of the K by taking the derivative. Okay. And so we pull the derivative inside that sum. Or sorry, no, we take the sum of rho to the k, which we know is 1 over 1 minus rho, take the derivative of that, and solve it all out, you get rho over 1 minus rho. Okay. Okay, so we can use Little's law then to calculate the average time spent in the system. N equals N up bar equals lambda t bar, so t bar is N bar over lambda. And again, if you massage that, you would get t bar is 1 over mu minus lambda, which makes, again, some intuitive sense. You'd think that the amount of time you're spending in the system is going to be related to the difference between the service rate, how fast you get served, versus the arrival rate. Okay. So the average waiting time, so that's the queuing time then, is, the total time spent in the system minus the time you spend getting service. So it's going to be T bar minus 1 over mu. And again, if you plug that in, you get W bar is rho over mu minus lambda. Okay. Okay, so we can see, well, as rho goes to 1, what's going to happen? Well, obviously, your numbering system is going to grow, and rho going to 1 means that lambda is approaching mu, so again, the time in the system is going to grow. Okay. And, the waiting time also. Okay, so just looking at a simple example problem, we have a data transmission channel with a certain rate, so that's going to give our service rate, and an unlimited buffer. We assume our arrival process to be Poisson and the packets to be exponentially distributed in length with an average length of 100 bytes. Okay, well, I should say that the rate combined with the packet length gives you your service time. Okay. So, We can ask, well, what's the maximum load or traffic intensity we can offer to the channel? So what's the maximum row where you have a fixed delay placed on the a fixed average delay? So you want to keep your average delay down to a certain value. Okay. And then you can ask for that traffic intensity, what's the probability that an arriving packet is transmitted immediately without having to queue? Okay, so the first one, we have to calculate mu. Okay, and so we need to determine what the processing rate is in terms of packets. So your packet length is 8 times 100 bits, and you have a transmission rate in terms of bits per second. So your packet processing rate is just your transmission rate divided by the length of your packets. We've calculated what the average time in the system is. So it's mu minus lambda. Again, we can use that to calculate. Derive our delay now in terms of not mu and lambda, but rather rho. So we want to divide out by either mu or lambda. And you can solve for rho in terms of t bar. And if we do so, we get 0.84 airlines. Okay, so that's the row that we get substituting in 50 microseconds for T bar. Okay. Now, for the moment, we're going to make an assumption, and that's that the probability that an arriving packet finds an empty system is equivalent to the probability that the system is in state zero. Okay. And assuming we can make that equivalence, then the probability that our arriving packet is transmitted immediately is P0, which we know is 1 minus rho, or 0.16. Okay. Now, that assumption has sort of intuitive appeal. You'd think if a packet arrives, the likelihood of it arriving to any state is equal to the probability overall that the system is in that state. But what we'll see is that that property is specific to Poisson arrivals. And this is called PASTA plus on arrival C time averages property. Okay. And this is a result that was actually only derived in the early 80s, so it's not actually one of these results of long, long standing. But it is, it's quite handy, and it does rely on the Poisson nature of the arrival process. We'll see an example where if you don't have Poisson arrivals, that actually doesn't hold. So we don't actually prove this. The proof actually isn't too bad, but we just accept it. But the intuition behind accepting it is based around this notion that Poisson arrivals represent the maximal randomness in time. And what that it because it's maximally random, or it's sort of distributed evenly over time, then because of that it makes some sense that you can look at the time average, you know, the time average of a system, the system spending time in various states, and that's sufficient for the arrival seeing that time average. Okay, it has to, you know, again, it hinges on the extreme randomness of our Poisson arrivals. Okay. So, again, this is one that we don't prove. You can, if you're keen, look up the proof. It's not too bad, but we didn't bother doing it. But, again, it's a property that's handy to use. Okay. But is, again, going to require that you actually have a Poisson arrival process. So, to see that it doesn't hold if you don't have a Poisson arrival process, another interpretation of that is that the current arrival is not in any way correlated to the previous arrivals. Okay, so again, extreme randomness, nothing that's happened before is affecting what happens now. So the state is a function of all your previous arrivals. But again, we're totally uncorrelated. For Poisson processes, we're totally uncorrelated from that. So again, the arrival is the current arrival's time is in no way dependent on state and how you arrived into that state. Okay, so we're going to look at sort of the extreme opposite of that. We're going to look at a deterministic queue. Where the service rate is twice the arrival rate. So whatever the arrival rate is, say we have one arrival per second, that arrival is going to take half a second to process. Okay. So what happens in that case? Again, it arrives, it gets processed, it departs the system. Okay, then the next arrival comes, gets processed, departs the system, then the next arrival. And so any arriving customer arrives to an empty system. So the probability for the arriving customer is P0 equals 1. Okay. If you looked at the time average, obviously, you're going to spend half the time with no customers and half the time serving a customer. So the probability P0 is a half and P1 is a half. Okay. So it's a very extreme example of the idea that if you're not Poisson, this property isn't going to hold. So you aren't going to see time averages. Again, there's a complete correlation between times of arrival. So once you know the first time, you know exactly the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. So again, if you have that correlation, that's the property won't hold. So you can sort of try and bounce between those two concepts to try and convince yourself that, again, you need complete uncorrelated randomness for the property to hold. Okay, so we're just going to use this anytime we see Poisson arrival processes. We're going to say, well, we know what's the distribution that the arriving customer is going to see. Okay. Now, we calculated an average waiting time, but we might also be interested in a distribution of waiting times. So, for instance, think about, if you have a higher layer using TCP, or you're going to have timeouts. So if you have too great a delay, so if your queue somewhere in the system is too great, then you're going to time out. You need to know more than the average delay to decide how often you're going to hit that timeout value. Okay. So again, it gets a bit tedious to actually construct these distributions, but we'll do it for the simplest case, the MM1 queue. Okay, so I already covered that. So the system is essentially, if you look at the queue, we may or may not have a customer being served. That depends on the state of the system, whether the system is empty or not. If it's not empty, then you do have a customer. Because of the memoryless property of exponentials, the remaining service time is still exponential with the same distribution. Okay. So an arriving packet is going to arrive to a system in a certain state, say K, so you're going to have K customers, and all of them are going to have the exponential service time. So the waiting time is obviously going to be the sum of all those service times. Okay, so what we need to know then is when the customer arrives, how many customers are already in the queue? What are the service times of those customers? So that's going to be an exponential random variable for each of them. And then the service time of the customer that's already in the server, if one happens to exist. Okay. And then obviously your queuing discipline will matter. If you have last in, first out, well, anybody who arrives is just going to wait for whatever's in the server to finish up and then be in. Okay. We're going to assume that we have our usual first in, first out. So if a customer arrives, it's going to have to wait for all the previous customers. Okay. So how do we find our waiting time? W? Again, we'll do this by constructing conditional probabilities. If we arrive to some state K, so we know how many customers are in there, then we can just sum up the distribution times for the K customers. Okay. Then we can unpick the conditional nature by observing that we know what the probability of having K customers is. Okay. And we know that, again, by our pasta property, which we just discussed. Okay. So the service times of the customers in the queue, if they're waiting and not receiving service, is identical exponential distribution. And again, by the memoryless property, if there's a customer in service, then he still has the same independent exponential distribution by the memoryless property. Okay, and so again, we're going to do FIFO. Okay, so we know what the probability of being in any state is. So we know what the probability of an arriving customer arriving to find K customers already in the system. Okay, so what we need to do is to calculate a combined service time for all the customers. So that's going to be the sum of their individual service times, including the one in service. Okay. Now, if we fix K, we've got the sum of K exponentially distributed random variables. Okay. And I think I mentioned in the previous lecture that's the Erlang K distribution. If you want to grind it out, we can do that using the Laplace transform and observe that if you have the sum of two random variables, that becomes the product of their Laplace transform distributions. So if we have K of them, we have the product of K. The sum of K of them has a product transformation. And so if we look at the Laplace transformation, we get mu over S plus mu to the K. Okay. We can then take the inverse transform to find the PDF, and we get the PDF is mu to the x to the k minus 1 over k minus 1 factorial e to the minus mu x. Okay. So again, that's our Erlang k distribution. So again, conditioned on finding k arrivals, we can find the PDF, the conditional PDF for our waiting time. Okay. Okay. The only slight complication to this is, again, the state zero, so when there are no customers in the system. Okay, and if there's no customers in the system, there's no randomness. You wait exactly no time. Okay. And so if you think of a PDF, that's a delta function, so everything spikes at zero. The corresponding CDF is the constant 1. Okay, so if you're thinking of the probability that t is less than any t, well, it always is because it's always 0. And the case for all other k, the CDF is just the integral of the PDF. Okay. So what we want to do then is get rid of the conditionality. And again, you're going to do that by just having a weighted sum where the weight is the probability of being in any given state. Okay. And that's appealing to this law of total probability. So if you can cover with events that are totally cover your space and they're disjoint, so in that case, that's our probability of being an event of being in any given state. Then the whole probability is the conditional probability times the probability of the conditional events. So we've conditioned, again, on being in a given state. We know what the probability of being in that state is. And we want to find a distribution then on the waiting times. Okay, so our distribution is given by the sum of all the possibilities. So it's Fw given of t given k times the probability you're in state k. Okay, and again, we can note that p0 is 1 minus rho, so we can state all our probabilities in terms of, we can extract all of the in terms of p0 and then in terms of 1 minus rho. Okay. So, again, we have the probability that we're in state 0 times... Again, the distribution, the CDF in state 0, which is 1, plus the rest of the cases are in some state other than 0. And for each k, you have the probability of being in that state and the distribution given that state. Okay. And so what we do is we pull the sum inside for that. And then we note that sum gives us the Taylor expansion of an exponential, or just the sum is equal to an exponential. So you can replace the sum with the exponential, rho mu, and then having done that, you just integrate the exponential. And so we can tidy that up, and we actually get a cumulative distribution function. If you want to then find the probability density function, you just take the derivative of that with respect to t. So that's what we got for our CDF. We can, again, calculate a PDF, and we can also, just as a sort of sanity check, we can check it against the results that we got before. Okay, so we would expect at least the average to be what we derived before using Little's law. So, again, to get the PDF, we take the derivative, and our expectation is just the integral of t times the PDF. And again, we've done integrals of t, e to the minus t before, and we can solve that, and you will solve that by parts, so just remember the solution, and again you end up with your value rho over mu minus lambda, which again is what we got before. So we have the consistent average, but we also now have the complete distribution. Okay, so we can ask questions about variances and upper bounds and limits as well. So, again, to look at an example, again, we can think about sort of something where you have a critical time. In this case, what we've chosen is a voice over IP solution. So typically the way you deal with these sorts of systems is transmit your packets at an appropriate data rate, so we'll have a bit rate of 56 kilobits per second, and then we can chunk that up into it. So we can chunk our packets up into our stream up into packets then, and the problem is that they're not all going to arrive at the far end with a uniform delay. Okay, there's going to be variability in the delay experienced by the packets. Okay. And so if that delay becomes greater than the play, so what did you do to account for this is that you buffer the packets for a certain amount of time, and then if the delay and then play out with in this case a fixed delay. Okay, and so that's great as long as your packets arrive before that fixed delay is or as long as your packets are processed before that fixed delay is encountered. So, to model this, we're going to assume that our packet lengths are exponentially distributed with a certain mean, and that the processing time within the buffer is also exponentially distributed. Okay. And so taking that together, we're going to see that you're going to have a delay in the system, and the question is, will what percentage of the packets will receive service or before you hit that sort of critical delay value, so at which point their service is worthless. And just by the way we've set this up, we've set it up so that what we need to calculate is that waiting time distribution, and then we have to determine that it's less than our specific maximum delay value. Okay. And so we'll calculate sort of how many packets are being delayed beyond what we want. Okay. We can then turn the problem on its head and ask, if we only want a certain number of packets to be lost, what size buffer do we need to, what size delay do we need to accommodate? Okay. So, the delay here has a number of components. So we have our propagation time, so it's taking time on the channel. It's also, you have to do some processing on all of the packets just to determine what the timestamp is. And then, of course, we have the queue delay. Okay. So what we can reason about is our queuing delay. So we started out with 20 microseconds. But from that, again, we're going to have to examine the packets to determine timestamp. And that's going to take a certain amount of time. And we're going to add that there's going to be a fixed propagation delay. And so we'll remove that from the amount of processing delay that we can tolerate. Okay. So now the probability of having to throw away a packet is the probability that the waiting time is greater than this value of 18.714. Okay. So the probability that waiting time is greater than a certain value is 1 minus the probability that's less than that value. Okay, and plugging in our FW, we get this quantity. Okay, so mu is the average processing rate for the packets. Lambda is the average arrival rate for the packets. And rho, obviously, is lambda over mu. T, then, is our value of 18 milliseconds. plugging all of that in, we get a probability of discard of roughly 34%. So that wouldn't be a great system. Okay. So now we want to say, well, we want our T so that we only have a small probability of discard. And so, again, that's actually fairly simple. You just, you know what rho and mu are. You solve for T. And so you see you'd now need 106.72 milliseconds, to which, again, you're going to have to add your 1 plus your 0.286 to account for propagation time and processing times. Okay, so it's a bit of a slightly contrived example, but again, it sort of gives an indication of why you might want to look at a distribution as opposed to just the average values. So this is a good time to take a break. That's our first sort of Q example dealt with the MM1Q. What we'll do moving on, again, is just look at various other permutations on arrival and departure rates, and you know, you'll approach them in similar ways. And we'll see, again, what interpretations they have and what sort of results we can get. So we'll take our usual 15 to 20 minute break and then resume.